Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Martin Fish is one of the UK's most respected and loved horticulturalists. He has been a regular on TV and radio for nearly 30 years, while at the same time a prolific writer in national magazines and books. He is active on all branches of social media and he's always on hand to guide the newcomer or the old hand with down-to-earth and practical advice. Hello and welcome to the Who's on the Grapevine with me, Dan Hayes, and my very special guest today, Martin Fish. So Martin, big part of your work, I suppose, is all these garden shows, and obviously you've got to do none this year, and it's your work, it's kind of part of your life, I imagine, nowadays, doing garden shows and small garden shows as well, garden clubs, etc., etc.
Yeah, it's been a strange old year, hasn't it, really, Dan? Mm. I mean, all the garden shows pretty much were cancelled, you know, back to last spring. You know, Harrogate's, then moving on, Malvern's, Chelsea's, Tatton's, Hampton's. Mm. We're all cancelled. So, yes, it's I work there judging most of them, but I also do talks and Q&A sessions and demonstrations. So, yeah, it's a big part of my work and life through the summer months. So, yes, it was a real shame for everybody concerned, you know, the exhibitors, the show organisers, the visitors, everybody. And it sort of followed on a bit, really, because then in the autumn I do pick up and do lots of gardening talks for garden clubs and WIs and U3As, all that type of thing. And, of course, they've all been cancelled as well. But what is, I suppose, a little bit of a saving grace is quite a few of the garden clubs have embraced Zoom, this wonderful thing that none of us had ever heard. Well, I certainly hadn't.
No, I had.
You know, I remember Zoom as being an ice lolly when I was a kid in the 70s. That's how old I am. Quite a few clubs are doing Zoom. And although it's a brilliant way of keeping in touch and communicating, not quite the same as being there in person, to be fair. But now I enjoy it. So we've got to wait and see now what happens in 2021. You know, certainly the RHS and other shows, Harrogate, and I had a meeting with the other day. They're all planning shows. So we've just got to hope that things calm down and they'll happen.
Well, it should do. I'd say fingers crossed. I think we're moving towards the end of the tunnel. How far that we got to go is another thing. But I think they're all getting, obviously, having a vaccine can't do any help. But I think it's good that they are, I suppose, planning that hopefully they can do in some shape or form. It may not be. It may be a couple of years until we can get back to how we were. But I think in some way, shape or form, it's got to work, as you say. So that's good news. Good news. Because obviously, it kind of, you've brought out your new book this year as well, didn't you? The Gardening on the Menu, which would have obviously been quite a big part of any of your talks, I would have thought. Certainly on the local groups, which is a bit upsetting for you.
Yeah, it actually came out a couple of years ago, but it's done very well. So we had a reprint this year. So sort of relaunched it, reprint, made just one or two minor adjustments to it. And I suppose the timing was pretty bad on that in a way, because we took delivery of all these new books in March, middle of March.
Yeah.
And the plan was that that was the stock really for all the summer shows that we'd be working at. And then, you know, Jill and I do quite a lot of joint talks. We do talks on the stage, cookery and gardening. So, you know, we would have used the book for that and then for garden clubs in the autumn. So it sort of brought that to a bit of a standstill. But the good thing about books is, you know, it's going to be there. It's not anything perishable. We've been doing fairly well on internet sales, so that's sort of kept the books ticking over. And hopefully we're planning things that we can do for next year to be able to promote and sell the book, because I think there is a big movement as a result of COVID this year, where lots of people that haven't grown vegetables and fruit are suddenly growing their own, which is great. It's getting people into horticulture. They're getting their hands in the soil, getting them into the compost. And I think and I hope that that will carry on. I think when people get the bug and realize how lovely it is to be able to pick something out of your garden and eat it fresh, they'll want to carry on doing that. So, you know, I think that's possibly a positive that's come out of this terrible situation we've found ourselves in. So the book that you mentioned is called Gardening on the Menu, and it is all about growing fruit and veg. So I cover that side of it, keep it fairly simple. It's how to get started, and it's, you know, it's a range of fruit and veg and best conditions to grow them in and how to get a good crop. And then Jill follows on with some recipes, well, lots of lovely recipes, how to use your fresh produce and get the very best out of it. So yeah, it's still there, and it's ticking along nicely, but hopefully next year when we can get back to shows, we'll be able to get selling it again.
Yeah, boxes. Yeah, because that brings us nicely on to, obviously, you were nominated this year in the GMG Awards, the Garden Media Guild, for your Pots and Trowels, which is obviously there. So it's on Facebook and YouTube. It's a very good way of actually showing people what they can be doing at the times of year, and not just growing fruit and veg, but in their gardens as well. So it looks like fun. Where did you get the idea for that from?
Well, it's sort of been an idea that's ticking along for a long time. I mean, I've been writing for a long time for magazines such as Kitchen Garden, for example, and doing things at the shows and radio for 20-odd years. And back in my sort of previous life, I used to do quite a bit of regional television for ITV and the BBC for about 12, 14 years. I did little snips that went into programmes, news programmes, or, you know, gardening programs for ITV. That hasn't happened now for a few years, but I still do some work with one of the cameramen and directors that I used to work with at the BBC in the East Midlands, Sean. And he's a brilliant chap, is Sean, and he's got his own little production company. And we do some commercial videos for various people that I do work for. And it was, I think we were just sitting having lunch, you know, a year or two ago, and said, we ought to be doing our own little videos. You know, there are gardening programs on there, but nobody can cover everything. And we just wanted to do the basic gardening tips that probably aren't always seen, I think, as glamorous for lots of gardening programs. So that's what started it. And we filmed them in our garden here up in North Yorkshire. We've done it slightly differently through lockdown. So we've been self-filming, and Sean's been doing the editing. He's down in Nottingham. So we've sort of set up little remote cameras and various things. And yeah, it's basically every week it goes out, Pots and Trowels. It's just jobs and tips from the garden. So as you say, it can be fruit, it can be veg, it can be growing flowers, taking cuttings, pruning, propagation, whatever's seasonal at the time, really. And we do a few live ones where we answer people's questions, a bit like a question time session. And they've gone really well. So yes, we were nominated for Garden Media Guild. We were finalists. We didn't win, but we were finalists, and we were really pleased about that. So next year we'll up the ante and see if we can win it.
You were robbed.
Well, I can't
you,
say
you
that.
You were robbed, yeah.
Yes.
No, to be honest, is the competition for such things as, it was under, yeah, vlogs, as you say, the videos, is actually, there's a lot of competition out there to actually get as a finalist. It's quite a great privilege, really. There's a lot of them out there, and you've got a lot of competition. So I think you should be, yeah, right, be very proud you got there.
Yeah, we were in the top. I think it's four or five, and it's like you say. We did it in the vlogs and the blogs category. In hindsight, maybe we should have gone. There's another category for sort of TV broadcast, but we didn't really think we fitted into that one, but there are lots of blogs, and it's quite difficult for the judges as well, I'm sure, judging a visual thing against a written thing, but when I think we could have gone into the television category, because although it isn't television, they class YouTube on there, and lots of the people that do YouTube videos went on there. So maybe next year we'll go into a category.
Yeah, no, fair enough, fair enough. Because another thing about your book, I know I've asked you before about, because you obviously, you self-publicise a lot of, and a lot more people were seemingly coming around to that idea of publishing their own works because of the greater control you can have over it. And I know you've said before, obviously, in, also it comes down to, if you want to print a small run, you've got more control then, whereas if somebody else owns the rights, you can't necessarily do it because they're looking to do big runs to make lots of money, whereas not always right for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, we did look at options, to be fair. And I in the past, I've written three books for publishers as part of series where I've written them, get paid my fee, and that's it then. You know, you get your free couple of copies, you get your fee, and you see them on the bookshelves for a while. But then they disappear quite quickly because there are so many new books coming out there from authors. So when we decided to do this one, Jill and I, we wanted it to have some longevity because of the nature of the work we do. You know, we've opened our garden for groups for the last 5 or 6 years. We work at flower shows. We do clubs and societies through the winter and autumn and winter months. So we felt we'd got a bit of a captive audience for our work. And I did talk to a couple of publishers. Part of it is they like big names, and I'm not a big name. I've been in the industry a long time, but I'm not a big name. But also I found that you see the books on the bookshelves, and within a season, they're being discounted, and then they drop off the end of the bookshelf because there are more books coming along. And so it has, I feel, a very short life as a commercial entity out there in the book world. And we didn't want that. We didn't want it to be a 6-month wonder. We wanted it to last for a few years. So that's why we went down the self-publishing route. And we wanted to keep it local. So we found a family-based business in North Yorkshire up at Settle, 2QT, who were amazing to work for. They've got a background in the publishing world and design world and magazines and books. So we basically, Jill and I, wrote all the copy. We did all the photography. They did all the design and sorted printers out and everything like that. And it worked really well for us. It does mean you've got to put some money into it, of course, but we were quite happy to do that. But it also, from our point of view, we had 100% control of what was in that book. We weren't having to work with sub-editors who were saying, well, you can't do that, or there's not enough pages, we'll cut that out. We wanted the book very much to reflect our garden and our gardening and Jill's cookery without being over edited. So, and it worked very well. And they sorted it out for us. And we initially had about 2,500 printed. They've gone. And then we've just done another print run of 1,000. We own the rights, copyright and everything. So we just run them off as we want them. And, you know, we'll probably keep it going for another, hopefully, a couple of years. And then we're thinking of might do version 2. So, you know, it will then continue on. Guardian on the Menu 2, the sequel.
Why not? Well, it's a very good book because I've got it myself. You very kindly sent me a copy. It's very good. And it's very nicely laid out. As you say, it's got a nice homely feel about it, rather than some of them are very, very polished, which is fine. And it's interesting you saying about that, because probably maybe the biggest name in gardening is probably a man called Monty. And I did notice the other day that his books have been heavily reduced on Amazon. And I made the comment that actually you could probably, certain writers, you could probably buy it off Amazon, for instance. It's such a reduced price. You could probably buy the book from Amazon and sell it back on your own website at the normal price and make more money, which is a ludicrous thing. But it happens, because as you say, unfortunately, you're not in control of it. It's the publisher. If they want to let it be discounted, they'll let it. Just, obviously, Christmas is coming, but it's ludicrous, really, that you think that can happen. But
I think how it works is they will have a stock of books. The publisher will control it. They want to shift those books because they've got more publications coming along. So they just cut the price. It's just to get rid of them, basically. And I don't want to be in that situation. But and again, as you say, ours isn't a coffee table book. It is a very much a practical guide. That's what I am. I'm a practical horticulturist. Yeah. There's nothing polished about me, Dan. You know, I get there. I get my hands in.
Surely not. Surely not. No, you are right, though. Yours is. I like that. The as you say, the coffee table, the big shiny. Look at these lovely glossy photos. Yours is what I can see. You've got a bookcase behind you. I haven't got mine installed behind me. But it's more the sort of thing that you're going to find in someone's kitchen that they will grab And I think that's a good thing. It's something that people will keep and refer back to time and time again. Whereas, as you say, the coffee shop thing that gets lower and lower down in the list of books on the coffee table. And as you say, you might not even notice it because it's got too many on top of it. But that's excellent stuff.
All My Reads gives you unlimited access to more than 100 specialist books, from history to mystery, rockets to royals, planes to trains, bikes to biographies, and much, much more. Access the digital books across multiple devices, including your desktop, tablet, and phone. All My Reads is just $4.99 per month. Visit allmyreads.com to find out more. Browse the extensive range of titles and try your first month for just 99 pence. Get ready to browse and begin.
Right, quick question for you. What's the greatest length or depth you've ever gone to for your love of gardening, Martin?
Oh, blimey.
Oh, I'm sure there's something there that you kind of think, oh my, did I really do that?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There must be. Well, I think probably from a practical point of view, I'm just trying to think on the heel here, is when I made, I suppose, a big decision was when I suddenly decided to give up my job as a head gardener. I was only in my 20s, early 20s, and decided to go it alone. That was in those days quite a big decision. And it was partly financial reasons, because as a head gardener, I don't know what the wages are for head gardeners now, but then it was really, really poor. And I just couldn't basically live on that. So I had to do something. So I gave my notice and started up my own sort of gardening business, which then within a year or two, I made a big step, which was to say, right, let's really put the boat out there, and bought 6 acres of land to start a nursery and then develop some gardens, which then, as it happened, went into writing and radio. So that was a big move at the time to do something very different and radical. You know, I could have stayed as a head gardener and probably moved up the ladder for the rest of my life and probably been retiring on a pension soon, but I wanted to do something different. So I think, yes, it was a big, big risk, you know, to the sort of me and the family, and to think, right, I'm just going to say, blow it all, buy 6 acres of land and start the nursery that we had in Nottinghamshire. I suppose that was probably one of the big, big things that I've done.
That's fair enough. Yeah, if I'm being honest to you, I'm more of a landscaper than a gardener. That's purely for money as well, unfortunately. You kind of, being a gardener, you're kind of not stuck in the hourly rate, but there is only a certain amount of hours in a day that you can give. And if you're doing an hourly rate type thing, you are, yes, you say, you're unfortunately done into it. But I'm not so sure that head gardeners, some might be, but I don't think it's still a massively well-paid job, let's say in the kind of the public world, as in working for companies. I don't think it is. I'm sure if you're a head gardener for the National Trust or someone, you may be, but there's very few opportunities for those sort of things, to be honest. So, yeah, no, fair play to you, same as me. You've just got to get up and sometimes do it.
I think the problem is gardening and horticulture is underrated as a profession. It's generally thought anybody can be a gardener. Yeah. And it doesn't help by the fact that, you know, you're a professional horticulturist, I am, and there are lots of excellent horticulturists out there. But in a way, it's a job that anybody can do. And there's such a lot of people that suddenly get to a time in their life, and I'm not dissing what they're doing because they're doing it because they want to, but they will give up a career in something completely different. Yeah. And become a gardener and set up as a gardener, job being gardener. And I don't think that helps the industry on the whole, because it devalues it slightly to people that have, you know, trained, done their apprenticeships, college, and trained for years and years to do it. And, you know, people think gardeners don't need to be paid a lot, whereas you'll pay a painter, a decorator, an electrician, a joiner, a plumber, your car mechanic, a completely different amount. But, you know, I'm having a bit of a soapbox moment here now, Dan, but I know you trained at college. We trained at the same college,
like Marysford,
You know, and you do all of that to get your professional qualifications, but there's not always the financial reward there. So that's why I think people deviate and do different things.
No, I agree. Often one of the most common things is someone comes out of IT, which obviously has given us Zoom, so we shouldn't complain too much. But you are right. I often say to people, there are gardeners, and there are horticultural gardeners. There's someone who can tell you what the plant is, and there are people who they're perfectly good. They can mow a lawn, blow the leaves up, tidy up, but you wouldn't let them prune your roses, for instance, your prized rose. But as you say, not all people, unfortunately, the general view of people is they generally see who was the cheapest. And then funny, I tend to get phone calls then saying, we had this lovely garden and it's just been decimated. Or I do some work and they say, oh, that's never flowered before. And you think, that's probably because somebody just cut it back in the wintertime and just cut off all those lovely flowers. As you say, most flowering shrubs flower on last year's growth. I mean, not all of them, but a vast majority. You cut off, if you start cutting it back in kind of autumn, wintertime, you'll never see a flower on it because you just cut it off. But this is the thing. Got another one. I know when I spoke to you before, Martin, you actually had a Granny Smith, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Yes, I thought that was wonderful, the Granny Smith. I know it's a type of apple as well, but it's often that, oh yeah, it's Granny Smith's garden. But that's where you got your, I suppose, first love of gardening from?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I think so. I mean, my mum and dad had a garden, but I wouldn't say they were avid gardeners. My dad was more when he retired, but certainly when he was young, it was a case of you mow the lawn, prune the roses, put a few bedding plants out to keep it tidy. But my grandma Smith, my Granny Smith, as you referred to her, she lived in just a little cottage in the next village to where I grew up in Nottinghamshire. She'd lived there all her life, and she'd got a big plot of land that got half an acre. The front garden was mainly very much an old traditional style garden. She didn't know much about gardening, but she got cuttings and seeds and things self-seeded, so it had all the lovely lupins and honesty and all those old-fashioned cottage garden plants. There was an apple tree in there, a few roses and shrubs, and then on the back my uncle Colin, he did all the veg growing at the back and kept a few hens and at one time a few pigs. So I used to go down there as a child, used to cycle from the village we lived in down on a Saturday. I would spend the day down at my grandma's house. I'd go down on my rally chopper and cycle down there. It was all downhill from where we lived. Yeah. And I'd spend the whole day down at my grandma's and used to love it. And then sort of when it got to late evening, my uncle used to have a van, and he would stick my chopper in the back of his van, drive me 3 or 4 miles home. But that was it. I just loved being out in the garden with grandma and my uncle. And we'd go walks, because it was in the middle of the countryside, we'd go walks up into the woods. And I think it was that instilled in me this, you know, love of being outside and the countryside. I hate cities, and I have to go to London for meetings and things, but I can't get out of cities fast enough, to be fair. I like to be able to see green fields and trees and hedgerows, and I think that comes from my childhood. And that sort of developed it all, and I suppose what set me on a route to become a gardener when I left school when I was 16.
We can't be much age different, because I had a chopper when I was young as well, and you are right, downhill they'd be fine, but they weren't the best bikes to try and ride up steep hills with that wonderful gear system in the middle of it.
Exactly, yeah, and if you slipped off your seat, that gear system was quite painful. Were you a Mark 1 or a Mark 2, Dan?
Well, I would have had one in the late 70s, so I think I'd have been a Mark 2, so maybe I had to go faster stripes.
Yeah, I was early 70s. I think I got mine in 71. So yeah. I was definitely a Mark one. Yes. So that gives us the age difference then.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, because I went to Merriswood in the late, I went to Merriswood in the early 90s. So very late 80s, early 90s. So as you say, and the place itself has changed a lot. When I went there, there was quite a lot of courses still. They were still quite horticulturally based, whereas now it's kind of evolved to much more than that, mainly being a large golf course. So they do a lot of that. But it's interesting how these things have evolved. It's a well-known college across the world in many ways, but it's interesting how it's evolved, and it's still doing horticulture, but obviously now there's you can do golf there. There's now there's still arboriculture, but there's obviously the you've got the animal has taken over that kind of life. Yeah, so but it's just very interesting how the place. I haven't been back there for a long time, but it's certainly evolved a lot since I was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I loved it. I was there in 79, 80-ish. And it was, before that I did my day release college in Nottinghamshire, a college called Brackenhurst, which was a brilliant grounding. I still keep in touch with one of my lecturers from 78. In fact, just very had good. His Christmas card arrive from Peter Mallett. And it was amazing. Then I went off to Merriswood, and it was the college for landscape and for nursery practices. And it was a fantastic grounding. And it was in the days when a full-time college course literally meant full-time. You were there 5 days a week, 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock. We used to have Wednesday afternoons off to do sports. But then we used to do every other Saturday morning. We were in college doing idents and tests and that type of thing. So it was brilliant. We used to get to work on the nursery in the evenings and nights. That was all part of it. So you were literally full time. I think we probably did more in 1 year full time there than you do in a 3 year degree.
I think, yeah, because a lot of the time they spend... Oh, you got a free session now. Yeah, I can remember. We used to work down the kind of farm on a Friday, and I can still remember him. The last time I went there, it was a few years ago, I could still see the dead hedging we did many, many, many years ago. As I say, what it's like now, I don't know. But it's a wonderful place. And I'd say it's something that I hope that young people still think that they can, you can make a career out of it, because you can. It's not all about, as you say, the earth thing, but it's all fun, but reminiscing's fun. Talking about you saying about your chickens and the pigs at Granny Smith's place, do you have, I know you've got chickens in your garden, do you have any other type of animal?
No, not at the moment. Well, other than a dog, we've got a spaniel, Molly the spaniel. So we've always had dogs, always had hens. We've got some hens now, but the layout of the garden, we haven't got the land now. We've only got 3/4 of an acre, whereas when we had 6 acres, when we were in Nottinghamshire, we did keep pigs. So Jill and I used to keep pigs, which again, we used to love doing. We used to just buy them in as weaners and rear them. And it's just, we love pork, and it's just homegrown pork. It tastes absolutely wonderful. We used to have a few sheep grazing on the field from time to time as well. But at the moment, no, it's just a hens for a few eggs, that's all. And then Molly, the mad spaniel that runs around the garden.
Yes, I have Bella, the mad spaniel, who likes to dig where she just shouldn't dig. But then that's most dogs, isn't it? Especially spaniels. Eyes bigger than their tummies is all I should say about most spaniels. And anything's a goal. Super job. Right. I think, did you ever find your signed copy of Percy Thrower's autobiography? Because I know we discussed this before, and you lent it out, and you've still never got it back, have you, all these years later?
No, I haven't. No, and I've been, since we spoke about that a while ago, I've been racking my brains as to who I might have lent it to. Yeah. And I got the book. It was a signed copy from Percy Thrower. Was that as a teenager? Percy Thrower was big on television. He was the gardener. You didn't have all the gardening programs that we've got now. You had one or two gardeners, and Percy Thrower was the main gardener. And I remember meeting him at the Chelsea Flower Show. It might have even been my first Chelsea Flower Show. Or if not first, the second. I think, in fact, I might have been an apprentice. So I'd have been 16, 17. We were taken down from work down to London. And it was quite late in the afternoon. And the show didn't seem as busy in those days. And he had a stand there promoting his books. And I had a wander up to him. and had a chat to him and bought his autobiography. And he was a lovely chap. And he signed it for me, wrote a nice message in it. And I had it for years and years, read it a couple of times. And it was literally from his life as an apprentice, you know, back in the 20s and the 30s and his life through at Shrewsbury and all the television. It was a really interesting read. And I lent it to somebody years ago. And you do these things and, you know, you say, borrow a book, and they normally come back. But obviously this one didn't. It's not on the bookshelf anymore. And I cannot for the life of me think who it went to. And I could buy another one, I'm sure, second-hand one off the internet. But it was just the fact that he'd written a personalised message in it from her to power, which was something that was really nice. So, I don't. So if anybody is going to be listening to this and they've got a book signed to Martin Fish, then could I have it back? I'll swap you for a... Gardening on the Menu, and a signed copy of Gardening on the Menu.
There you go. Okay, you can't fail with that, can you? Because I say, I remember Percy Thrower from, obviously, used to watch Blue Peter. And when I was young, in the early 80s, he was the gardener on. And it's interesting you say you could walk up to him, because in many ways now, you do, but you don't. But as you say, he was probably the biggest name in gardening around that time. Yeah, he was approachable, whereas I'm not saying people aren't approachable now, but you couldn't necessarily do that with the big names now, if you get my meaning. It's maybe how the world has changed a bit. Obviously, the media world is taken by storm. But as you say, I think you'd struggle to go to, let's say, Chelsea and walk up to a very well-known gardener and do that. You probably could, but I imagine there'd be a very, very big queue. And some may not necessarily want to do that, which is fair enough. Is, as you say, they have their own lives to lead as well. But it's maybe a way the world has changed a bit, necessarily not for the best, I would say.
I think we live in a very celebrity-led world, don't we, at the moment, with everybody wants to be a celebrity. So, yes, I mean, a lot of our gardening personalities are very approachable, but they just get, like you say, big crowds around them. Yeah. But Percy was there on a stand. It was in that sort of avenue where they have all the sundries, but where the London Plains are. There's an avenue at the back of the show gardens, and it was with all about the publishing group he worked for. And there was nobody there. He was on his own. So I was with our park superintendent and a couple of the other lads that had been taken down for the day. And they said, I bet you don't go and talk to Percy Thrower. So I said, yes, I dare. And we had they stood in the distance sniggering at me. But I thought, I've got a nice signed copy of a book and a nice conversation with Percy.
Life is very much, I think, about, as you say, is you have to work with that card you got dealt with to a certain chance. And as you're saying, you have to sometimes grab these opportunities because they may not necessarily come around again. And I think that's true of all things in life and in gardening as well. You have to try things. Gardening, I think, is wonderful because although there's lots of ways to say certain things will grow in certain places, but wherever you live in the country, it is quite good because there are quite a few occasions when something that shouldn't grow where it grows does grow. And there is no rhyme nor reason to it sometimes. It just does. And I think that's the wonderful thing about gardening is sometimes just give it a go. You may be surprised.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's, as we said earlier, has happened a lot this year. People, through necessity or being at home, bored, and whatever the reason, they've gardened. And I think they've enjoyed it and realised that, you know, everybody can grow something, which is great. And I think the fruit and the veg side is really important. I think it's just to know where your fruit and vegetables come from for children, to go out and pick a lettuce, a tomato, an apple off a tree, dig up some carrots or new potatoes from the garden is a wonderful feeling. And, you know, I've been doing it as a job for 40-odd years. And before that, you know, since Grandma's garden. So I'm going back, you know, almost 50 years since I started gardening with my grandma. And I still love that first root of potatoes I dig up every year. You know, it's wonderful. It's almost a surprise. You know they're going to be there, but it's a wow factor that you're digging up these lovely clean tubers. So, it is amazing. And it's just, it's got that feel-good factor to it as well. I know one of the buzzwords at the moment is well-being, and it does make you feel good. Gardening gives you that buzz. Probably, you know, not today. I've got to go out later and put some plants out in the client's garden, and it's a miserable wet day here. But even so, you can still get some pleasure out of that. I'd sooner do it on a dry, sunny day, but to go out in the garden, moving the plants around, just feeling the plants always makes you feel good.
Oh yeah, for me, I love it when I put autumn garlics and onions in, and I still love it when a few weeks later, they poke the little green shoots out. Ooh. And it's a wonderful thing. As you say, you know they're going to do it anyway. And as you say, you know there's a garden there. And it doesn't mean they're going to grow fabulously for next year. But it's just that wonderful feeling that you this thing, it's, oh, it's brilliant. Oh, my little garlics are there, as you say. And it just as you say, well, they're all, as you say, the world nowadays loves to have little words and little pockets to put things in. But yeah, I think it's something, and I think it's parents have got a lot to play in it as well, because I had a granny, not Granny Smith, I had Granny Joy. She wasn't necessarily the most joyful person, but they, the different generations used to have the bottoms of their gardens as allotments. Whereas nowadays, space is the problem, but you had bigger gardens back then, generally. But as you say, I think it's the thing, and it's my children are not massively into it, but they do enjoy it. Begrudgingly, they'll come with you. And once they're there, they'll be away for 2 or 3 hours down the allotment, normally finding bugs and things like that, or the friendly fox will come out to see if he's got anything to eat. But and I think yes, you need people on television and the media, and maybe schools maybe need to try and put. I mean, you do basic science at school, but I don't think they do any horticulture. Most schools will have a garden club, but I don't think it's on the national curriculum, horticulture.
No, and it tends to be done, I think, at sort of primary level, not so much at secondary. And I think that's where there needs to be a push to do more secondary gardening, so that it then filters people into think of it as a possible career route. Because I think, you know, you do it when you're young with your parents and at primary school, but then you sort of forget about it. And we need to get people channeled to thinking of this as a career, because it is such a wide industry. You know, it's not just gardening and landscaping, the science side to it, if you're scientifically minded, you know, all the micropropagation and all the growing technology under lights. It's a huge field, is horticulture. But I still think, even just doing it like you're doing with your children down the allotment, or what they do in primary school, even if they don't do any gardening then for a while, it sort of implants something into their mind. I mean, my eldest daughter, who is, well, she's 35 now, she lives in New Zealand. She has been out there 5 years. Before that, she was in the police force in England, went out, started a new life, and we've got two lovely grandchildren out there. She grew up with me being a gardener and seeing me doing things, but then didn't really garden throughout her adult life until she's got her own children. And now in New Zealand, they've got a veg plant, and, you know, they're picking strawberries now, because obviously they're upside down, aren't they, out there? Yeah. So it's their summer. So they're just picking strawberries and, you know, sowing all their vegetables and things, and they've got a little, and she's just basically picked up from where she stopped off all those years ago. So it is vital to do it in the early years, and hopefully it just implants it into their brain that it is there for later on. So that's great. I think we need to get all kids gardening of all ages.
Yes, I was going to say, you have to bring the young ones on, because you can't, no one goes on forever, unfortunately. And as you say, you need the young blood to come through. No, it's all right. Finally, have you got any big plans coming up, Martin, that you can tell us about? Anything exciting developments that you'd like to?
Exciting plans. Well, our exciting plan at the moment is we are moving house. We've been here for nearly 12 years. We moved up from Nottinghamshire, from the old nursery site. We've got this site here. We moved up when I was running the Harrogate Flower Shows. And we've developed the garden and sort of opened it to the public for the last 6 or 7 years, and NGS and various charities that we've supported. And I think one of the things through lockdown, it's made everybody think about their life. And I've always said, when I get to 60, which is only just over a year away, we would do something different. But I think this year's made us think we'll do it a little bit earlier. So we decided to put our house and garden on the market a couple of months ago, and it sold very quickly. And we haven't actually found what we're looking for. What we want to do is another project, essentially. We want to do another garden, but I want to do a garden with a difference. That's my plan. So it's still to get somewhere, either to build one or to do up an old cottage with a bit of land with it, and do a new garden while I've got time. I want to plant more trees. I love trees, Dan, and I've always wanted, I'm not going to have enough room to plant an arboretum, but I would like to plant sort of a choice collection of some of my favourite trees, including liquid amber Merist, Werpulston, which, you know, is the village where Merist Wood is. I've got a sort of selection of trees in my brain that I want to plant. So that's the plan. So we're going to rent in the village. We're going to rent a house in the village till we find the right property. and then we can start on the next adventure of our life and doing another garden. Whether it be the last one or not, I don't know, but we're going to do another garden. So yeah, that's quite exciting and something to look forward to.
I say, are you staying in Yorkshire, or are you looking kind of looking a little bit further afield? Or
we like where we are in North Yorkshire. We love the area, we love the village, we've got some really good friends here, so if we can, we will stay here. It all depends on the property, and that's why we decided to rent, because we can't find what we're looking for now. So we're going to rent, and then we can just wait till hopefully the right property comes along. If it happens to be somewhere else, the perfect property, you know, we've got family back in Nottinghamshire. We haven't ruled out a move back to Nottinghamshire, but I think our first choice would be to stay up here if we can. And I do a lot of work in North Yorkshire. I do a lot of work for the Great Yorkshire Show, the Harrogate Show still. Harlow Carr, I'm an advisor at Harlow Carr. So I would like to stay up here. And that's the plan. So we'll watch this space. That's all I can say.
We should wait to hear. And as you're saying, we'll keep up top on all your social media. So I'm sure we'll soon know. At least seems to know people. I was chatting to Steph Hafferty the other day, and she's moving as well to Wales. So, and funny enough, so am I. I'm actually finally buying somewhere, hopefully, fingers crossed, to touch wood. And I can have my allotment at home after all these years.
Brilliant.
Sunday. So, Lots happening, but I wish you the best of luck doing it. And obviously, we'll keep updated with you and see how it happens. But yes, it'd be strange leaving your garden as you've got it. As I say, the pictures were on the interview we did, and it's a lovely looking garden. But I guess you're gonna have to stay kind of. I'd love to say you could come down to me in Berkshire, Hampshire, Surrey, but I don't think the price of land down here to plant your small arboretum is probably a little bit more expensive than it is in Yorkshire, unfortunately.
Well, having said that, I think it's not cheap in Yorkshire. We're in a very expensive part of North Yorkshire, but it's we'll find what we're looking for, I'm sure.
Well, you'll find something. It might even be something you never even thought of. This is the fun of it. Sometimes you've got to have a slightly open mind and think, I can do that. So, well, thank you very much for joining us, Martin. And wish you good luck in your house move and everything going forward with the book. And hopefully we'll catch up with you again one day soon.
Thank you very much. Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to Kitchen Garden Prime for just £4.99 per month. You'll be getting a whole lot for your plot, including an easy-read tablet and phone edition to read anywhere, anytime, exclusive access to 10 years of digital back issue archives, access to exclusive content from the online allotment, the Mudketeers website, plus the monthly print magazine will be delivered free to your door each month. Head to classicmagazines.co.uk/KGPrime to sign up today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.